From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. There's mixed economic news this week. The economy is growing and gas prices are dropping, but unemployment and underemployment are at a four-year high. And in California, state workers are caught in a budget squeeze. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said he had no choice but to cut 10,000 jobs and slash the salaries of 200,000 other workers to minimum wage. Here to help us make sense of what's happening is author and economist Dr. Julianne Malveau. She is the president of Bennett College. Good doctor, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Tony. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. It is the first day of the work week, but it seems there are more grim numbers coming out of Wall Street. Unemployment at a four-year high, as we said. At the same time, though, Dr. Malveau, we hear that the economy is actually growing in certain sectors. So how significant are the unemployment and underemployment numbers?
Well, the unemployment and underemployment numbers are extremely significant, especially when you look at not only the four-year high, but the fact that we've been shedding jobs for seven straight months. Some of the companies that people consider benchmark companies, General Motors, Starbucks, and others, are having a hard time. We're not even going to mention the airlines or, you know, some of the others. But so we see that people who are looking for work, who are working or looking for work, are basically experiencing a hard time, not to mention the inflation. Gas prices, though dropping, are still higher than they were a year ago. The bottom line is that it's a soft labor market, and that soft labor market is affecting people's expectations, the kind of spending decisions they're making. When you combine that with a soft housing market, you have an economy that's not looking great.
You know, the federal government cannot bring itself to say the R word, recession, of course, but we're pretty darn close to it, aren't we?
Well, you know, they're not going to the technical definition of recession, and that's the only thing that saves the federal government, is negative growth. And so when you see a growing economy, even if it only grows at 2%, that's not negative. And so that's what they're holding on to. But when you look at what the projections for economic growth were, and when you compare our growth to growth in other parts of the world, quite frankly, we might as well go on and bite the bullet, you know, take our medicine, use the R word, and figure out how to get out of it.
Well, you know, speaking of unemployment, here in California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has caused quite a stir. Last week, he signed an executive order to cut the wages of 200,000 state employees to minimum wage. That's $6.55 an hour. Now, he also laid off more than 10,000 temporary workers, and he did it because California is 1 month into the new fiscal year without an approved budget, and he says this draconian measure, even though it's only temporary, is necessary to keep the state solvent. You're an economist. Is this the only way to do it?
Governor Schwarzenegger is characteristically guilty of political posturing. Frankly, first of all, to cut the wage to the minimum federal wage as opposed to the minimum California wage, which is $8, clearly takes people who are already at the bottom back a step. And it's posturing. He's attempting to get people to pressure the legislature when what he needs to do is sit down and work with Karen Bass and the rest of the Democrats in the legislature. The money is there, but the budget has not been approved. It isn't that California doesn't have the money, and California has often run on these kind of deficits. There have been many, many occasions when they've run with these kinds of challenges. He's making a point. The layoffs are more defensible than the notion that he's going to cut, but the cuts that he's proposing are not likely to be held up. The state treasurer says that he's not going to cut people's wages. He's not going to give people checks that are lower than the checks they're entitled to. So basically, Brother Schwarzenegger has the uncanny ability to place himself in the center of a storm, and he's done it again, and obviously it's going to generate headlines, and it may cause the legislature some distress. I think that, though, they're in very good hands with the Karen Basses and the others there, and I expect that they will have a budget approved by the 1st of September.
Well, it will be interesting to see. Karen Bass, of course, is the Speaker of the California State Assembly, by the way, the first African-American woman
Precisely.
To have such a position in this country.
And a very talented sister who I think is quite equal to the task of containing Schwarzenegger.
Well, here's my question to you. You talked about the state controller, who, you are very correct, said that he would defy the governor's order and not roll back those salaries. But can he do that? Can he get away with defying the governor in this way?
Well, he has his own constitutional authority, and I think that this may be a case that goes to the California Supreme Court. I mean, if he chooses, now the challenge will be this, if he chooses not to issue checks on Schwarzenegger's executive order. Can checks be issued at all? And that's a constitutional question. I don't know the answer to it. But you have these two key state officials clashing, both of them elected by the people of California. And I fully expect that there will be a compromise before the 1st of September, Tony. Again, I think that the governor is posturing. The governor has always been a fiscal conservative. He's not pleased with the way the budget negotiations are going, so he's making a point.
And he's making it apparently on the backs of some of the state workers, it appears.
He's not making it on the backs of the legislature. What if he said that he was going to cut his salary? What if the state assembly didn't get their money? See, I often wonder when we do these kind of budget things, who should be held responsible for the inability to come to budget concurrence? Shouldn't it be the people who couldn't come to agreement?
That's an interesting point. Let me ask one other question on this point before we move on to our next topic, and it's this. Cities, states, even the federal government run budget deficits routinely, it seems. Is this a broken economic model that governments are following?
Actually, some states and cities, Tony, are not able to run deficits. Some state constitutions prevent that. So while the federal government is often able to run deficits and sometimes does so much to our detriment, the current deficit that we're carrying, partially a function of the Iraq war, seems to be quite larger than it should be. But many states and many cities don't have that ability. And so that's when you get into crunches like this. California does have limited ability, but probably half of our states cannot run a budget deficit. So you've had situations. I was a college employee in California, I hate to say how long ago, but almost 30 years ago, working for one of the universities when we didn't get paid. 1 month, we just didn't get paid. We got paid the next month, but they just said, y'all not getting checks because the budget was run out. So you do get those kind of situations. We had a budget freeze, I think, in 1995 in D.C., where federal employees did not get their paychecks. So the issue is that when you have divided legislatures, Democrats and Republicans, who have different priorities, the legislative process is a process of compromise that people don't often come to easily. And that's why I raised the issue that I did before. What if you held the legislators responsible for the failure to come to budget agreement? What if you said to them, you're the ones who are going to be penalized, not the people, but you? How many weeks are you willing to work without being paid? I think then it brings it right home and perhaps incense them to do different kinds of things.
Here's another economic topic that keeps on coming to haunt us, the struggling automobile market. General Motors Corporation posted a $15.5 billion quarterly loss on Friday. It's the third worst loss in the car company's 100-year history. Compared to unemployment, let's say, how does this kind of niche economic news affect the economy as a whole?
Well, the auto industry has been shrinking for some time, and certainly rising gasoline prices, despite the recent fall, but the rising gasoline prices overall from a year ago, are causing consumers to make different kinds of decisions about automobile consumption. People are taking old cars and using them longer. They're looking at their SUVs and saying, maybe I don't need that. Some people are parking their luxury cars, and all of this is showing up in terms of sales of automobiles. In Detroit in particular, that city and other cities that have auto hubs are taking big hits, and the economy is affected as well. But I think for the last couple of years, you've seen GM and Ford and Chrysler doing some internal adjusting around what they're offering, what kind of automobiles, what kind of vehicles they're offering, so that you're moving a bit away from the SUV. You're looking at more diesel. You're looking at more just a range of different kind of automobile options, which is a good thing. It's an excellent thing. But in the short run, you end up with these kind of losses, which really do hit home. Certainly in the African-American community, where you have a disproportionate number of folk employed in that industry, certainly in cities like Detroit, where you have that concentration, it's not good news. There's no way to make it good news.
You mentioned auto companies trying to adjust, and that's part of my next question to you, because last week the Chrysler Corporation announced that it is getting out of the auto leasing business. Now General Motors says it, too, is downsizing its lease operation by tweaking auto lease terms to make leasing less affordable. What's the practical impact of such a move on the car buying and car leasing public?
Well, the auto companies got into car leasing because they were able to extract surplus profit from the leasing business. They were able to get folk who didn't want to make a long-term commitment to a vehicle, younger people, other folks, some corporations who wanted to drive a car for 3 or 4 years, turn it back, get something newer. And they were able to turn that into a profit. As we know from financial markets now, the automobile companies don't also need to be in the financial markets and in the business of leasing. So from a bottom line perspective, it's a good decision. Now, if you or I or, you know, one of our neighbors want to go lease a car tomorrow, it makes it more difficult for us. If our credit isn't good, it's going to be more difficult. We might get a different term. You know, there are, I know people who lease a new car every year. That's how they roll. It's going to be more difficult for them to do that. They may have to buy something and keep it for 4 years, and that's just not the end of the world. I think that in all of industry, you're seeing people making strategic decisions that are a function of the way the economy looks now. And this, for these auto companies, is a strategically appropriate move that may pinch consumers.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that, because leasing was one of the ways you could get into a car without having to have a huge down payment. So now if leasing is going to cost more, buying a car already costs more with regard to the down payment. It's going to be really tough for some people, isn't it?
It will be, and you know what it's going to put pressure on is the used car market. Because if you can't get a new one, you go get a used one. But if they have more demand for used one, that's going to push up too. So the love affair that America had with the automobile,
coming to
an
end.
Love affair we have to look at again. You know, somebody cheated on somebody. I don't know.
Coming to an end. Dr. Malvo, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your explanations.
Thank you, Tony.
That was author and economist Dr. Julianne Malvo. She is also president of Bennett College.